The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt!
Media Productions.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Kuhn.
So we're here. It's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. Another Wednesday here on the hottest wrestling podcast in the world. That's right, I said it. The hottest wrestling podcast in the world. Why It Ended, we're back. And originally, we were slated to have Kevin Sullivan as our guest. We recorded what was an awesome episode. But Matt, you want to tell him what happened?
Well, I think what happened is that Kevin Sullivan's black magic got a hold of my computer and he just...
You were right.
You know, the thing is we recorded an amazing interview with Kevin Sullivan.
It was good, man.
And we're going to have him on soon. And I use a program called Pro Tools and it's pretty infallible. It never messes up. But as soon as I pressed stop on the recording, the file disappeared. It was just like a straight line. So you couldn't even see it. I thought for sure it was on my computer somewhere. I looked around all night last night, all day today. The interview is gone. But luckily, Kevin Sullivan has agreed to do another interview with us, if not next week, very soon.
Yeah, so we will definitely bring you the Kevin Sullivan interview because it was one that, you know, you definitely didn't want to miss. But today, we have a special episode for you. It was originally going to be a bonus episode, and it is with a guy, super cool dude. His name is Air Paris. And he was AJ Styles' tag partner, short-lived time at the end of WCW before it closed. And a lot of people compare that duo kind of like to the Rockers, how AJ ended up being Shawn Michaels and Air Paris, you know, in a different form was kind of the Marty Jannetty, right, Matt?
Yeah, you know, and it's an interesting thing, this show, because it was one we were saving for a bonus episode. It's a great episode. And we'd love for you to take a listen to it because it really was more in line with one of our original concepts for the show was to take these guys that you remember and you didn't remember what happened to who might have been in for a short time. And he was in for a short time, but man, what a story.
Yeah, and you know, just please excuse myself and Matt's chemistry. This was only our second time recording, so I didn't know how much, you know, I didn't want to be too mean to Matt yet, so I was still kind of nice to him at the time. And, yeah, so just keep that in mind when you listen. But, guys, remember, tell us what you think about our show on social media. Follow us on Twitter at Why It Ended. Follow us on Instagram at Why It Ended. WhereItEnded.com on YouTube. We have our Patreon page, right, Matt, which we appreciate you guys are supporting us and donating to us because it's really helping us keep the show for free. And then, of course, Pro Wrestling Tees, get my shirts, get Why It Ended shirts. And did I forget anything?
You know, I don't think you did, but I do think that we might have forgot to talk about last week's interview with Tully Blanchard. Everybody loved the interview with Tully Blanchard.
Yeah, Tully's the man. And, you know, I actually went back this week and watched a few of his matches. Like, we talked about it a little bit on air and off air, and you told me how great they were. And I'm actually going to steal some stuff from my new Robert Strassbrand character because, dude, he was the man. And yeah. Again, I'll admit it was before my time, and I'm learning a lot from watching him. So it's super cool.
Yeah, for me, as you teased me about, I was marking out because Tully was just the coolest. I liked the bad guys when I was a kid, and Tully was just the coolest of the bad guys, but not a guy who got cheers. But on our show, he told us the whole story of everything, why he left Crockett, why he left WWE. And we're going to get a similar story, but a lot different in a lot of ways from Air Paris today.
Yep, and I am looking forward to it. And I think you guys are going to be pleasantly surprised with this little switcheroo guest that we've done on you.
Coming up next, Air Paris on Why It Ended.
Stop using your hand. .com.
Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. Now, if you're not sure about all this, this is all very new to everybody. Now, if you're not sure about all this, if you're not sure about this, and this is all new to you, check this out. You can try a free, that's right, a free stroker. All you have to do is just pay the shipping and handling of $6.95. For just $6.95 shipping and handling, you can get a free stroker. All you got to do is go to pleasureproductsusa.com/product/Josephine. That's Josephine, and enter the coupon code FISTBUMP. So whether you're going to get the 3V Scarlet Stroker, or you just want to try out, or you just want to dip your toe in the water, so to speak, with this free stroker for only $6.95 shipping and handling, make sure to check out our good friends at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now remember, to get that free stroker, go to pleasureproductsusa.com/product/Josephine, and the coupon code is FISTBUMP. That's pretty funny. But you know what's not funny? PleasureProductsUSA.StopUsingYourHand.com. Today. The Sellers Law Firm, LLC, is a law firm focusing on family law and criminal defense, while still providing a wide range of general legal services, from adoptions, child support, custody, divorce, and legitimation, to DUI, traffic tickets, misdemeanors, and felonies. The Sellers Law Firm is here to help you.
As a proud member of the Griffin Downtown Council and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local...
You were on a roll. Hold on. You were on a roll, man.
I don't know what any of these words mean. As a proud member of the Griffin Downtown Council and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local community while expanding its services throughout the state of Georgia.
Of course, if they can ever be of service, please let Judy, Bobby, or Jody know. That's what family is for.
Whether you find yourself in need of a lawyer now or whether you just want to ask a few questions, give them a call at 770-415-9848 at the Sellers Law Firm, where clients become family.
And you never know when you're going to need law services, so go ahead and follow Jody Sellers at Sellers Law Firm, S-E-L-L-E-R-S Law Firm. And they're also a sponsor of wrestling. Is that right, Rob?
Yep, UCW Hometown Throwdown and Summerfest. They're sponsoring August 11th in Barnesville, Georgia.
Sellers Law Firm, LLC, where clients become family. Hey, Robbie, we have here today, we're very honored to have here today, known as Air Paris in WCW, of course, part of the tag team Air Raid with AJ Styles. We have Air Paris, otherwise known as Frank. How's it going, Frank?
Man, I'm doing well, brother. Hope you guys are good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, yeah, I just want to say thanks so much for doing this, and you... When we created the show, you were like the perfect guest for the show. A guy that was super, that is super, super, super talented. But I think just a lot of people, when they, you know, even when we brought up your name, it was kind of like, oh my God, dude, I totally remember him. He was awesome. Like, I wonder what the hell is going on with him now. So you are like the perfect guest for our show. So thanks for doing this.
No problem, man. I'm excited. Glad to be a part of it. And hopefully we can let people know where I'm at now.
Absolutely.
All right. Yes.
Because hopefully the point of why it ended is to give every story a happy ending. And it's not too hard, because a lot of times people get out of the business, we think it's over for them, but really it's all beginning. And speaking of the beginning, we're going to take you right to the beginning, Frank, and ask you, when did you first start watching wrestling?
Man, it's one of those same old stories I think everybody probably has. You know, you pass by the television when a grandparent's watching. I had one of those great granddads who would chew his tobacco and yell at Jim Cornette on the television, you know, and you know, you didn't quite know why he was yelling and screaming and wanting to punch out this guy in a white suit on TV. But it just captivated me, man. I can't give you an exact age, but from the time I was, I can have a memory. I was a wrestling fan.
Hey, and where was that? Like, where did you grow up at?
Northwest Georgia. You actually do quite a few independent shows right around where I live, so I'll have to come catch up with you when you're back around. But I'm only about 40 minutes south of Chattanooga, right in the very northwest corner of Georgia, right above Rome.
Okay, cool. Yeah, man, I do too many independent shows where I can't even remember where I am, like tomorrow or yesterday, or I don't even know where I am right now, man. But
that's job security, bro.
You're right.
I was going to guess it was somewhere in the South. So I think we were close.
Where'd you get that from? His accent?
Hearing you two together, you guys should have a reality show.
Bro, I thought Air Paris was going to say he's from New York.
No, definitely not, man.
You're not from Jersey, bro?
I say y'all way too many times.
Hey, so Frank, were you one of those kids like myself that was obsessed with wrestling? Like when you started watching it, was it something you were totally obsessed with, totally into?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was about, I guess, 10 years old, my sister was married to a guy who started training here locally, you know, and it's one of those things where that was like the WWE to me at that point, because these local shows, you know, they may draw 100 people, but the building was packed. And I kind of got to be around that and see, you know, see it up close a little bit more. When we were growing up, I didn't have a lot of money to go to actual shows and do WCW or WWF shows, but that local wrestling was the big time to me, and to be able to get to be around it at all and get to kind of, you know, crawl in a ring at 10 years old was just amazing to me.
And like, what year was that? Like when you went to these independent shows?
Man, oh my God, you're gonna make me date myself.
Give or take.
I'll tell you this. My first, and Chris Harris calls BS on this on me, but my first wrestling match, quote unquote, in front of a crowd, which was probably six people, five wives, maybe one uncle or something in the crowd.
Hey, that's a good crowd. That's a good crowd.
Was when I was 14, and that was 93. So, you know, 89, 90 was when I first started getting to go to those shows.
Wow. So I don't want to jump too ahead, but when you were, that's just already making me like realize how cool this story is. Cause when you were 14, you were already having pro matches.
Allegedly pro. I'm not sure they would even be considered semi-pro anymore. But yeah, I got to get into a ring and take some bumps and not call any spots and get destroyed in about 55 seconds. But
Matt, did you know that? Did you know that he was wrestling when he was 14?
I saw something that he was wrestling at 17. I didn't realize it was 14. I guess the laws were kind of lax down there in Georgia, huh?
Yeah, we were backwoods, man. Of course, you know, no commission.
Well, the thing is,
I started when I was 16, and I thought that was really young. But 14 is, good God.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things where I may have a match every 3 months, so that's why Harris calls BS on me and says I didn't start wrestling until later on. But
hey, I believe you, man. I believe you, man. That's all that matters.
Oh, I appreciate it, bro.
Hey. So after your initial early teenage years wrestling, you took kind of a break, right? You took like a 3-year break.
Not really. When I was in high school, I had to slow down a little bit. I was actually, you know, I had to slow down and get through high school to be able to enjoy wrestling. But right after high school, I met up with some guys and started wrestling in North Georgia wrestling, where Disco and Buff Bagwell and some other guys started. Ray Lloyd, they had all started there. And I kind of got in there, started actually working with some real actual pros like David Young and Bobby Hayes, those guys. You probably remember David from TNA.
And, yeah, totally.
And that's when I learned to start actually learning to wrestle.
So, Robbie, we hear these stories about, you know, breaking in with CM Punk and Cody Rhodes, but Paris got to drop. He got to break in with Glacier and Disco Inferno. What'd you think of that?
Hey, that is my dream. Those were two of my favorite wrestlers when I was young. You know, it's so funny because not only do a lot of people compare me to Disco Inferno in kind of like a different way, but I think he's a super talented and intelligent guy. But Glacier, about a month ago at a show in Connecticut, he was on a random show, and me and him had like this karate like pose down against each other. And I just got to talking to him, and he was telling me all about how he did it indies and like the Georgia area and everything. So that's pretty crazy that you just bring him up. He was talking about the same area that you're talking about now. So that's funny.
Yeah, and then those guys were already gone. No, those guys were already, they had already moved on when I got there. So I was kind of, you know, that was on a different swing. Those guys were already in WCW, I believe, when I got there.
Now, when you met them, did you ever think that like one day you could be in WCW like them, or did that seem
super
far fetched?
No. Yeah, no, I weighed 170 pounds. So I had zero delusions of grandeur that I would ever get to anywhere like that.
That's, because at the time, was cruiserweights like not that big of a thing, or
No, not at all. I think Billy Kidman was the only guy on TV who was small at the time. You know, and he was doing a shooting star press, which nobody else was doing on television. So he had that under his belt. You know, maybe Sean Waltman, but he's a pretty good sized guy. So
yeah. So you kind of just felt like, yeah, that's just never. If I can't do anything cooler than the shooting star press, that's just never gonna happen.
Yeah, which I could never ever do. Those flips, I left those up to AJ.
Well, I think he did them all. And at some point, you guys met up, but it was an NWA Wildside, which was kind of a developmental tour for WCW. Can you tell us a little bit about NWA Wildside?
Yeah, I met up with Bill Behrens. When I got in with David Young, we started traveling. He had some bookings in Music City Wrestling in Nashville. We started going up and doing some of those and met up with Bill, started coming down to Wildside. And that's when, you know, this is when you start working with some guys who it seems like everybody around me was making it. Wildcat, Chris Harris. I was traveling with Abyss a lot. AJ Styles was there, you know, very, very early when he was starting. Cassidy Riley, the Naturals, Chase right. Stevens, those guys. Everybody around me was good, and that's when Bill really found something and just made magic happen down there. Just an old building out in the middle of Cornelia, Georgia, but every time we had a show, it was packed, and everybody in the business came through there, from Dusty Rhodes and AJ to Matt Sydal, the Briscoes. Everybody had been through that building.
Yeah, and I remember, give or take, because I've been in that building a few times. What does that hold? Maybe 100 people tops, or
100, 150 maybe.
And I made, on three different occasions, I made the 12-hour drive from New Jersey with a car full of guys, and the whole car got paid $40, not each, for the whole car, and it was four of us, and we took the $40 and we used it for Waffle House, and that was it. But it was always worth it, because like you said, the shows were so good, the crowds were so good, and the talent was so good. It was just a cool place to be and like learn and get your name out there.
Absolutely. And one of the things was Wildside was syndicated, for what it is. That was a pretty big deal at the point, because I've made friends all across the country who would say, it was so dedicated to wrestling. I would be up at 11 o'clock on Saturday night ready to watch Wildside. And then I find out folks were tape trading and going after all of that, but those tapes, when that was still something, because I guess we were doing some pretty good work, you know?
Yeah. Before YouTube and before where every independent wrestling organization was the same exact thing. Exactly. And Wildside was standing out. So no, it was a cool time for it.
So at some point you got a developmental contract with WCW out at NWA Wildside. How did that come about? Who offered it to you? What was the deal?
Actually, we didn't get a developmental contract. We signed talent contracts right away. It was when they started sending developmental talent to Wildside. Terry Taylor and J.J. Dillon would come down quite a bit and watch their guys. You know, they were sending Elix Skipper, and they sent some names down. You know, Three Count and those guys came down just to help out, and Young Dragons and those guys. And they would come and watch those guys work and see what we were doing, I guess, to make sure that they were protecting their investment and looking at the future. And I just happened to be in a program with the guy who ended up being the best wrestler in the world for the last 20 years. And, I'll always give total credit to AJ for being willing to listen and work with me and listen to some of my crazy ideas that we had. And we were just killing that. He could do anything. And at the time, I could put a match together pretty well. And it was just kind of magic. And next thing you know, I was already doing security stuff for WCW. My first shot with them was January 3rd, 2000. I was a paramedic who ran in to save Sid from Jeff Jarrett and Bret Hart when they were putting the Silver and Black NWO together. So my exactly. I was a paramedic. You know, my mom always wanted me to go to medical school, but all it was to get me there. So my first night in the company, I got spray painted NWO and just did everything, I guess, the right way. And they kept bringing me back and, I got some dark matches, did some worldwide stuff. I even got to be on the mothership, not to brag too much about that, but WCW Saturday Night was a pretty cool thing to be on. And, eventually, JJ and Terry were there and saw me and AJ working and asked us to come to Baltimore. They brought us up. We were actually there, forgive me. The Monday after the Ravens won the Super Bowl, if that tells you the time frame. I'm terrible with dates, but we did our dark match, had about 7 minutes. He does the shooting star press to the floor. We had, you know, 10 or 12,000 people chanting holy crap in a dark match that wasn't even – we almost got bumped. So for a dark match that almost didn't even happen, for us
and
to get
with, those, and with guys that it's probably the first time they're seeing you two.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, nobody there knew who we were, you know. So we go out and have that match. When we come back through the curtain, they said, we'll be sending you guys a FedEx sometime this week. Insane to get a contract out of one try, you know?
Yeah. Like what is that? Like what goes through your stomach? Is it just like, it feels like a dream or like how does that feel?
Unbelievable. Yeah. It was just insane. And then we actually were wrestling an independent for Bill Barron's. In Athens, and this is before, I guess before cell phones. I may have had a pager. It's how old I feel. But my folks told me there was a FedEx package waiting on me at home. So I drove this 3-hour drive in about 12 minutes flat, and get back there. You know, and you look at this contract, and it's this thing you've always wanted, and it's this dream come true, and then you look at it, and you've got a $300 a week guarantee, which was. I think probably the absolute lowest contract Turner ever offered.
Wow.
Well, it certainly it certainly wasn't Lanny Poffo money.
Well, no, I wanted genius money. So what we did was we actually sent it back. I told Bill, I said, man, get us a lawyer. We got to get genius money out of this. But we sent it back and that's, I don't know if you've ever turned down your biggest dream and goal in life, but that's the worst week I've ever had in my life, probably, just wondering and thinking, hey, they're going to just turn us down and they're going to think we're greedy and not sign us anyway. And thankfully they did for, you know, the next, I guess, 6 months or so we had a contract.
So
got it.
So what you're saying is that you and AJ both received a deal. It was $300 a week and both of you turned it down?
Yeah. We sent it back. We actually used a lawyer out of Cincinnati that Bill knew. We sent it back and countered, and they came back and they actually upped it pretty good and then gave us some nightly guarantees as well. So thankfully Terry and JJ would send us out. We were doing indies 5 nights a week and then Nitro and Thunder. So
Robbie, how ballsy is that for a couple of kids that they finally get their dream? They can go to cruiserweight heaven up there in WCW. They get their contract and they're looking at the dollar signs. They're being smart because they think they can do better. That's ballsy as hell.
I wouldn't have cared if it was $5. I would have just said I want to sign it, have the opportunity, and then I'll like show them and I'll get more later on. But that is insane. And that's the second, because after that AJ turned down a contract from WWE, so he's turned down two contracts where people would call him insane. So
yeah, I think yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and I think that's Bill Barron's who's brokered so many deals for so many guys. He just felt that he knew we could get more. I mean, it was definitely the bottom dollar. I was making more as a security guard and doing extra spots per night than, I mean, I was making $500 a night doing those, and I was getting two of those a week. Wow. So I could have, you know, not been, when I was non-contracted, just doing extra spots, I was making more than I would have been with that contract.
Well, he probably just heard the story about the dark match and he knew how good it was and how like they must have wanted you so bad. So he probably figured, you know, these guys will definitely pay you more money. So, I mean, Bill's a smart guy. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. And they offered it to us as soon as we came back through the curtain. They, you know, they told us to get gear because we were both wearing, I was wearing a Hardy Boy outfit and AJ at the time was working in like tennis shoes and workout pants or, you know, warm up pants. And I believe it was Arn Anderson told us that, hey, get some gear. You know, if you'd went out there in wrestling gear, those people would never forget you.
Wow.
Awesome.
If Arn Anderson says to get some gear, you go buy some fucking gear, right?
you get gear, sir.
Yes, sir. I'll get some gear. Well, you debuted on TV alongside AJ against Evan Courageous and Jamie Noble on an episode of Thunder. And a lot of people associate you with AJ, but you guys were a brand new tag team when you started WCW, right?
Yeah, we had been working against each other for probably a year. That when we teamed on Thunder, I guess it was we debuted. I know we did a Nitro match, but I guess we debuted on Thunder. But that was the first time we ever tagged. Other than that, we'd been wrestling each other everywhere for about a year, I guess.
And were you guys like on the same page? Were you going into it saying like, this is our chance. Let's become an awesome tag team, not one up each other. Let's work together and like do something special and make a big, you know, make a big name here.
Yeah. I mean, it was just one of those, hey, let's do what we can with every minute they give us. And, you know, thankfully again, they put us with people that we knew. I didn't know Evan quite as well, but Jamie Noble, we knew him from, you know, again, Wildside. And just he was really giving. He was already established and an unbelievable worker. So he gave us a little bit more probably in the match than some other guys would have.
So Robbie, I think nice. What we're learning is that everybody from Wildside has a really heavy Southern accent. Jamie Noble, well, yeah. AJ, and Frank.
If you're a regular there anyway, I think all the regulars do.
Hey, so let's talk a little bit about that Shooting Star Press on the floor. How crazy a move was that, and how did AJ not kill himself or somebody else doing it?
Man, the way he didn't kill himself was I was going to get hurt before he did. I made sure I got under him. He did it. The first time he ever did it was on a guy named, I believe, Romeo Bliss. And the guy was, you know, he did it from the corner. And the guy wasn't exactly great worker, but he wasn't a dive specialist and had never been dropped. So he didn't know how it feels to be dropped and didn't really catch AJ. So AJ kind of landed on his feet out of that one. Every time he did it on me, man, I just tried to catch him chest to chest. So he would land on me and not the floor.
Are you aware of what we're talking about here, Robbie?
I am.
Off the top rope, Shooting Star Press to someone prone on the ground outside.
What are you trying to say? You don't think I could do a Shooting Star Press to the outside of the ring?
You know what? Do me a favor. Go ahead and put that on video and actually put it on Periscope, because I think we all want to see you do that Shooting Star Press from the top rope to outside the ring.
I barely could do a double axe handle off the second rope inside the ring.
If it's good enough for Macho Man, it's good enough for Robbie E.
So guys, have you ever asked yourself, what should I watch on the network today? Well, maybe you like to have a few beers while you do it, but you can't decide which beer to have. Well, lucky for you, my good friend CPA has started a podcast called Off the Hop Rope. Beer and wrestling is a match made in heaven, and Off the Hop Rope is here for the hot tag on the beer that goes with your favorite matches.
Now, each week, CPA and his fellow good brothers, Smart Mark Sterling and Top Shelf Troy Nelson, will pair a quality beer with a match they feel perfectly demonstrates the heart and soul of some classic wrestling matches. Check them out at Off the Hop Rope or listen wherever podcasts are found. You can also find them on Twitter and Instagram at Off the Hop Rope. If you like beer and wrestling, this is for you.
And don't forget, this podcast that's hosted by CPA, he is the guy, if you heard the Vince Russo episode, that drove Vince Russo in the car that Vince Russo asked to leave the car because his windshield wipers didn't work and he had garbage all over it. That's all I'm saying. It's worth a listen.
So if I'm going to, you know, get advice of what beer I want to drink while I'm, you know, watching wrestling, I think this is the guy to do it.
I agree. CPA is the man, and guys, you definitely want to listen to this podcast.
Offthetoprope.com.
But you know what's crazy? Thinking back about wrestling now, man, how crazy is it for him to do the flip? But how crazy is it to stand under somebody doing that flip and catch them?
Oh, I mean, I'm trying to think if I've ever been in that situation. If I have been, it's been with a large group of wrestlers, and I'm usually on the outer skirts of the group. So
you get a hand on them, right?
Yeah, as long as my pinky touches them, we're good. I tried.
Well, you're going to WCW with AJ, and you're going into like a thriving kind of second wave of cruiserweights. You know, you had Evan Courageous and Jamie Noble, the Young Dragons. You had Three Count. You had Kid Romeo and Elix Skipper. Both those guys were good. And they started the Cruiserweight Tag Team Championships, and you guys were put in the tournament. Was there a point where maybe you thought you'd be given those belts because you had some steam behind you?
You know, no, not at all. to be honest, I was even surprised they put, when they told us we were going to be in it, I was kind of surprised. It did lead to my first pay-per-view debut, though. I was shown getting pinned on that pay-per-view where they did the finals, though.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that you didn't demand in your contracts that you had to win the titles in your first match. Shit.
Man, Bill didn't tell me to do that. But.
I know we're not breaking any news here, but I'm not sure if either one of you are aware that 205 Live is going to be starting a Cruiserweight Tag Team Champion. What do you think, Air Paris? Do you want to get out of retirement? Maybe go for those titles finally?
No, not at all. the only wrestling I do anymore is when my daughter wants to challenge me for her WWE women's title. And I usually end up, I have to be Charlotte, and she makes me tap out to the bank statement in about 3 seconds. So that's about the only wrestling I plan on doing anymore.
Well, at least you let her win, so that works out good.
Oh, she's a shooter. I have no choice.
You know what's so funny? As we talk about some of these names during, like, you know, in the WCW tag team tournament and stuff, you mentioned Elix Skipper and Kid Romeo. You know, along with yourself, these are, like, other guys I think a lot of people don't realize how talented they were. And they, you know, they kind of did vanish off the face of the earth as far as wrestling in the past, like, 10 years. Am I right? Kid Romeo, Elix Skipper, I haven't heard their names in forever.
Yeah, and I'll be this is kind of a funny little side note. When they started sending those guys to Nashville to work with us in Music City, I kind of got attached to Elix when he first started coming up there, and I got to work with him, you know, first time he was going in front of a pretty good-sized crowd at the Nashville Fairgrounds. And then when they sent Kid Romeo up, I was attached to him as well. So I'd already worked with those guys quite a bit before we ever got to WCW, and I'm not sure what happened to Romeo at all, but Elix Skipper was probably the best just athlete to ever get into a ring. That man was amazing.
Well, he's responsible for one of the greatest spots in the history of wrestling, right, Robbie? That
walking on that cage.
Oh my gosh.
Insane.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. We're talking about the crazy Shooting Star Press. Think of the crazy things that guy have done. And no, I've never walked on the top of a cage, Matt, and I can't. And I could barely get up to the top rope.
Well, you guys get your solo win in WCW over Alex Wright and Disco Inferno. I forgot about these guys. They were the Boogie Knights. And it was kind of your underdog win. That must have been maybe the highlight of your career at that point, which is getting that win on Nationwide TV.
You know what's cool about it? I mean, winning, losing doesn't really matter, but my folks got to be there and you know, see us on Nitro, because it was actually, it was a live Nitro from Huntsville. And for my parents to get to be there after all the little independent shows I had done and get to be there for, you know, the one win, was pretty cool, you know. Me and AJ, our track record isn't quite as bad as a tag team as people think, because I believe we only had 5 matches, maybe 6 as a tag team ever, even though that's what everybody associates us with, or associates me with. Of course, he's doing okay for himself. But, Air Raid keeps getting brought up, and I think we only did 6 matches. And I, you know, we won at least one, so not too bad.
Well, in a short period of time, you know, in the few months that you're in WCW already, as you're talking to us, it sounds like you got a lot of cool stories out of it, you know? So it seems like you made, you know, use out of the time well.
Oh, yeah, man, absolutely. You know, and getting to, you guys know, I mean, it's the coolest job in the world. You get to see the country, sometimes the world, and you're just with your friends doing just the most fun job you could ever think about. So, and you know, you get a little bit of a rub from being on TV, and the money wasn't so bad either. But just
do you ever still talk to AJ? Like, when's the last time you talked to him?
Sure, yeah. I saw him. I was at the Wildside reunion show. He did the surprise pop in at. Got to hang out there for, you know, about an hour or so.
And when was that?
Oh gosh, Matt, you're probably better with this than me. Maybe 3 months ago.
Oh, okay. Oh, that recent.
Yeah, it's the one everybody was afraid he was going to get in trouble with for doing, but I think he was given permission. He was U.S. champ, and he did the surprise at the end of the reunion show.
I think you handle it about as well as it could be handled, you know, because everybody knows AJ Styles, and if people research enough, they see that he was in a tag team called Air Raid with you. And let me ask you this about him, because we have to ask about a little bit. Could you tell right then that he was different, that he was going to have this huge career, that he was a special talent?
You know, you can't really predict that somebody's going to be the greatest, you know, performer in the world. I mean, that's far-fetched, but he could definitely do anything, and you didn't really, and Rob, you've worked around him and with him as well. If you say, hey, can you do this? He never says no. It's always, yeah, man, let's do it. Yeah, come here, let's do this. And even, no matter how crazy something was I would come up with, he could always do it and was always willing. I mean, once in a lifetime athlete, so definitely special.
And the cool thing about him is beyond how big of a star he is right now, but that he's always been, and how talented he is and everything. He's like the most, and like down to earth guy. Like, would you agree with that? Like, I don't think he'll anything would ever change him from being just a genuinely nice dude, you know?
He is a better human being than he is a pro wrestler. And that,
yes,
I don't know.
True.
I don't know if I could ever say, you know, anything that's more true about him. There's nobody that deserves every great thing that happens for him or to him than Alan. He deserves it.
No, that was a great way to put it, because you're right. It's crazy.
That's a beautiful thing to say about somebody, you know, that they're such a great person and such a great wrestler. And you got to team with this great wrestler a few times. And the last time, I believe, the last time in WCW, you were given the name Air Raid. Who came up with the name Air Raid?
You know, I'm not sure. I do know, I can tell you that one of the ladies in the office did show up, and they told us we were doing this new gimmick, and they fitted us. They wanted us to actually wear those flight suits during the matches. And I mean, you could barely even move in those things. And thankfully, we got out of that. But those huge aviator shades that, you know, the super large ones on our face that make us look like bugs. Those were brought in about 20 minutes before the show that day. Somebody had seen them and thought about us with the gimmick, so we tried to get out of wearing those. But as you can see, our word didn't get us out of that one. But
it's interesting, Robbie, when you're given a bad creative idea or you're given something that you don't think is going to work, how do you best approach it, especially as a young talent?
Well, I think that's a situation-based question. You know what I mean? I think depending the spot you're in is, you know, if you're a super over guy and you're a top guy, I think you got a little more balls to speak up, even if you're new. But if you're someone who's walking on eggshells, you're kind of just going to go with it. There's been a million characters I've done and women I've lost to and things I've done. Then in my head, I was kind of like, well, does this really make sense? But I kind of just went with it because I wanted to be the guy that just was easy to work with. And, you know, I knew it wouldn't affect me in any way. But it's really hard to say based on who you are. You know what I mean? I think every situation is going to be a little different.
Well, you had that great run in WCW, and it came to an end on the Final Thunder, where you were given the name Air Raid. You had the cool sunglasses. And you lost to the Young Dragons. What do you remember about that match?
Man, that was, again, another guy we knew from Wildside was Jimmy Yang. I started working with him, I guess, probably 1998 is the first time I saw Jimmy. And then Kaz was like a smaller version of Muta. He was just unbelievable, and I was a fan watching him anyway. So getting to work with those guys, again, that was probably the most fun I had the entire time I was there. It was the most comfortable I was. The rest of the time, never really got comfortable in the ring. Rob, you know how that is. If you're not comfortable and just not feeling it, you don't really put your best foot forward. So you kind of don't push for as much in a match, and you may just, you know, not get as much out of it. But that match was fun. Cool thing we were talking about before the match was doing the little hip toss thing and catch him and throw him up. And Kaz kept calling us Top Gun the whole time and making fun of the gimmick. So in the match, he's getting ready to we do the little hip toss spot, and he goes for getting ready to do this kick in the corner, and he starts doing the airplane spin around the ring with his arms out, and he's going Top Gun, Top Gun, and then just kicked the piss out of me. It was tremendous.
Now, do you think, looking back, do you think, like how we were talking about, that you just stayed quiet and didn't speak up to do more, just kind of because you were still kind of new and just wanted to not people think you're an asshole or anything?
No. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, but another thing was, you know, when I was on the indies at Wildside, I was covered up, man. I wasn't built like AJ. Let's say it like that. But I was wearing, you know, a Hardy Boy ripoff outfit. I was that 90s, late 90s guy. Yeah. It's like, I guess, like having a beard now or something, or tattoos 10 years ago. But then when I get there, they put me in spandex, and I mean, good Lord, you know, you're in your underwear, you know, you're in your underwear for the first time on television in front of millions of people. And my confidence was just shot, man. And I don't feel like I ever had a good match in WCW, minus maybe the one with the Young Dragons. Personally, you know, the rest of the match was pretty good, but.
So it really, like, just being in gear like that for the first time really messed with your head that much?
Can you imagine being completely covered up and having these great matches, and that they bring you in, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, well, we're going to change everything about
it. Yeah, no, I guess. No, I'm thinking about that. That's crazy, man.
And you're in the ring with a bunch of guys with great physiques. You know, you're in there with AJ and Elix Skipper and the Young Dragons. You must have been self-conscious.
Yeah, and one thing is, I mean, everybody else on the roster was wearing pants. I said, is there no way you can put me in pants? And they're like, everybody. I'm like, if everybody else is doing it, shoot, let me.
You know? You should have demanded it in your contract, man. You would have got it. No,
but, you know, I couldn't have worn mine though because I had these sweet pants I was wearing on all the indies, and Sean O'Hare come up and said, "Man, hey, I like those. Where'd you get them?" And then the next week on Nitro, he was wearing them.
Yeah, that's how it goes. And he's twice your size, right?
I said, good pants, sir. Like those.
Well, you did the Final Thunder. Did you know at that time that WCW was done?
Man, and this has been, I guess, told a million different times, but there were about 100 different scenarios floating around from Eric buying the company to just going out of business. And there were all these different scenarios, and you know how it is. If you tell 10 people, by the time you get to that 10th person, the story's going to be completely different. The one thing that never was even floated around or mentioned or thought of was, you know, WWE buying the company. That's the one thing in wrestling that could never, ever happen. And, by gosh, it happened, right?
No, I was just going to say, so from the day you debuted on WCW as a talent, not just security or anything, from to that last Thunder, how long was that?
Oh man,
do you want the answer?
What, under contract, probably like 6 weeks, 7 weeks.
Your debut was February 14th. Your last match on Thunder was February 28th.
Now, were you so just like your career was kicking off and whatever? Like, was it such like the biggest bummer? Like after that, like so unexpected.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of what sent me into a pretty harsh dislike for wrestling there for a while. You know, you work for the and I was young I was 21 and I was kind of stupid. You feel like, you know, at that point in time, you shouldn't be able to make any decisions for yourself.
Yeah.
they're always going to be bad. Right. They seem great at the time, but so yeah, man, you know, you work hard for this stuff and you finally get here. I mean, I was 21 years old and already had a contract. Most folks don't get signed until they're 30 or so, or start getting pushed until they're 30. And I had all this time and already had all this momentum. And instead of looking at it that way, you know, the way AJ did and keeping going, I looked at it like, well, the rug's been pulled out from under me. And I took my ball and went home.
You're like, fuck it, it's over, right?
Pretty disappointed. Well, I went to California and did an independent show and met some folks and just hung out there for a while and kind of just started following my favorite band around the country and not wrestling and wrestling less and less and less as it went and just kind of vegged out, I guess, for a while, man.
Hey, Robbie, can you imagine being on TV at that age, having the contract at that age? What would your mindset be? Would you be similar to him in that you might think, well, this is it, it's over?
No, I think I would have been more like AJ and just kind of said, well, I think if I could get this and this could happen so quick, I would have went ahead and kept going and wanted like more. I wouldn't have been disappointed, but if I got a taste, I would have wanted a lot more. But like, look, after hearing your story, like, do you look back ever, or did you look back and like have regrets and say maybe you should have stayed wrestling often, like after it?
I mean, maybe from the wrestling aspect, I feel like I could have done a lot more.
What could you have done? What could he have done, do you think?
Man, AJ wanted to keep teaming. You know, there was some value. I mean, although brief, I mean, we were just coming off national television. And he wanted to keep going as a tag team. So, you know, if me and him had stayed as a tag team and been working around and that started clicking, who knows what happens as far as maybe I could have wrote his coattails to WWE, you know, eventually. But, you know, looking at wrestling, man, yeah, there was probably some things that I didn't get to do that would have been great. Never, ever worked for WWE. Never worked for TNA or Impact. But, man, I've wrestled Jerry the King Lawler. I've wrestled Rey Mysterio. I've wrestled in, you know, in front of my parents, in front of, you know, 18,000 people or however many people that building was holding. Done so many cool things. Man, my daughter can go on WWE Network and pull it up and see Dad and thinks it's cool. And probably the coolest thing that came out of wrestling is that I've made good friends who are still willing to help, you know, let me make things happen for my kid, which is very, very cool. You know, those guys do a lot to make my kid's dreams come true. And they do cool stuff for them and let them come to events that's probably the coolest thing about it, is that my kid gets to enjoy wrestling and now I get to watch it as a fan with her. So,
well, you know, that's awesome,
pretty cool. That being dad's a pretty cool gig, man. I'm okay with not being a wrestler.
You've got that great perspective now, but the perspective then must have been a little different. Do you remember who told you that you were, your contracts were not getting picked up by WWF?
Johnny Ace gave me a call. You remember I told you I went to California. I got a call. My dad said, "Hey, you need to call Johnny Ace again before cell phones." So I called John, and he said, "Hey, you know, Vince bought the company. I guess you've already seen, blah, blah, blah. I love you guys. Give me 6 months in the company and I'll try to bring you up." And you know how that goes. He gets sidetracked and, you know, in that whole world, and that never happened, of course. But the, Rob, go ahead and prepare your sad voice here for me, brother, because, he says, "Yeah, so you guys' last day is May 11th. Which is my birthday. Yeah, that's sort of a bummer that kind of led to the whole dislike for wrestling as well. But, you know, it all worked out in the end, I guess.
What is so crazy is that, like, even I didn't realize that it was only 6 weeks. I thought it was like 3 months or 6 months. So it just shows how but wrestling back then, just 6 weeks of time, and wrestling was so big that just those 6 weeks could be so memorable, as where now guys could be on TV for a few years and people don't even know who they are. You know what I mean? So it just shows you how back then, like, how much it meant to actually be on television, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was a whole different time for wrestling.
Yeah. If only, Matt, if only it was still like that now, Matthew.
I tell you, you know, and it's funny because I remember Air Raid. I remember the Cruiserweight Championship. I remember Kid Romeo, and I certainly remember Elix Skipper. And I think it was because so many of us were watching and there was so much good stuff on TV. And that was a time where we were all really enjoying the Monday Night Wars, you know. And did you still harbor any kind of dreams that you would get the call up there, Frank?
No, not at all, man. Once I kind of got away from wrestling, I saw there was another world out there. I did take a few years completely away from the business, didn't do anything. I just kind of followed my favorite band around the country, and was a not a groupie, but kind of like a deadhead, I guess. And
who was the band? So,
it's a band out of Athens, Georgia called Widespread Panic.
I'm aware.
So, I started, oh, so you know, right? Yeah. So I started seeing those guys, and eventually I got called back to doing a couple of local shows and started promoting. And that's where, you know, I actually really started enjoying wrestling again, even to where it helped me become a fan again. But I started running some little local shows here and was doing pretty well. I think my second show I ran, I had about 1,300 people in the building for Rick and Scott Steiner.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was pretty good, and I was just hotshot booking using TNA guys and AJ and the girls there, and, you know, Kevin Nash, and just hotshot booking old Memphis stuff, bringing name in every month and Papa House.
Cool, man. Wow, 1,300 people. That's far. That doesn't happen often nowadays in the independents.
So we found out why it ended, but now the most important part of the show is, what are you doing now, Frank?
Well, as of right now, I am on newborn time. My wife and I just had a brand new baby girl. She is 27 days today. Little Piper Paris is her name, and big sister Perry is 6 now. So, those are the new Air Parises there, the HEIR Air Parises. Wrestling is something that I do on Monday, Tuesdays, and sometimes Sundays. Now we watch and do that as a family.
Well, that's super cool, man. You definitely got your hands full. How quick did those 6 years go, like, of your older daughter?
Oh, it's crazy, man. And now I think about it. Somebody said, well, you know, when you put it in this perspective, she's 1/3 of the way out of the house, and it just breaks my heart. She's my best little friend, you know?
Yeah, I'm already – my kids are 16 months old. I have twins, and I'm already – like every other day, I'm just thinking of me walking them to their first day of kindergarten, and I'm already like crying. It's insane, man.
It really is. That'll be the hardest thing you've ever done in your entire life.
Oh my God.
Seriously.
You have no idea. And in the world,
not to get political for any stretch of the imagination, but in today's world, it never will get any easier.
How am I becoming the soft one on this show? I'm supposed to be the cool host, and Matt's the dork, and I'm being a wimp right now. How is this happening?
Call me a wuss or something, man. But no.
you bring out the worst in me, Paris. I have two boys, Cash and Carter.
Very cool, man. Congratulations on it.
Hey.
No, no, there's just nothing like being a dad. It's the coolest gig there is.
It sounds like you came out the other end great. You've got a great family. You've got a newborn. You're successful management in retail. And let me ask you this. Do you have any what ifs or any regrets at all in regards to your wrestling career?
Man, I don't. Like I said, I got to do a lot of really cool things. So, I mean, I did things that other people never get to do, even within wrestling. Rob, you know, there's 100,000 guys out there who wish they could work on one pay-per-view or be on one Nitro or be on, you know, one Impact or Monday Night Raw, and they never even get the chance to be an extra on one of those things. So to be able to wrestle in front of those crowds and be around your heroes and just live that dream, man, not everybody gets to do that. So to look back on wrestling with any kind of, and I know this, I'm probably going to be the most vanilla guest you'll ever have, but to look back on wrestling with any kind of resentment or anything now, I think would be foolish on my part because it did so much for me.
Oh, totally agree. That's why I said earlier, even just talking to you, I said, wow, in that short period of time, you got to do a lot of cool things. You know, so you definitely, and that's how I look at my career too. It's the same way you're a positive guy like I am. It's just, dude, compare what you've done to some people you went to high school with or some childhood friends. And you know, like think of how many cool things you've actually done. And it's amazing.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, how many people get to be around their hero? I mean, I got to be around Ric Flair, you know, when you get to walk down in catering and sit, you know, 2 feet from Ric Flair and just kind of be in that presence or, you know, when Hulkster's there, just to be around these guys that you grew up watching and idolizing. And, you know, in some small way, you're part of what they do. It was just, for a kid from Somerville, Georgia, you really can't write a better story than that.
There any particular people back there who were legends or veteran wrestlers who were particularly friendly to you or particularly unfriendly to you backstage?
Nobody's unfriendly. If anybody seemed unfriendly, I just stayed away from them. But no, like Diamond Dallas Page always treated us really, really good. I can't speak well enough about Nora Molly Holly. She became a fast friend and I still, you know, text with her to this day. Just, she'd already been there and kind of knew the lay of the land and had everybody's respect and was friends with everybody. So she'd kind of, you know, lay that groundwork. So we wouldn't just be brand new folks coming in, but, Booker T always treated us well. Daphne's a great friend. Nobody ever really just treated us terrible, even when we were security.
Well, it sounds like everything's going great for you now, Frank. It sounds like, you know, Robbie, it's like you said, you're a positive guy because regrets and what ifs can kind of eat you up. And, you know, I think Frank's got the best attitude about this. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. As we go on each week and have different guests on, I could bet money that not everyone's going to be as positive and happy about their careers as you are. And it's a good thing that you're.
We should do some outtakes where I'm just pissed off at the wrestling business. and you guys can just like splice them in during the show.
You know, I'll tell you, I was on the phone today with a legend, and this legend has a lot of regrets and has a lot of what ifs and is angry and had success. And the thing is, a lot of that is a choice. It's a choice how you feel. It's a choice.
I agree.
You know, it's a choice to feel like you made mistakes, or it's a choice to learn from it. Frank, when were you finally able to kind of throw off the bitterness you had about wrestling and start your life that you have now?
Probably when I started doing that promoting, man, because as everybody knows, promoters make all the money, right? So to finally start making some actual money doing shows was pretty good. But that's just when I started enjoying wrestling again and saw that it was my poor decision to not keep going forward and not it, wrestling didn't do it to me. Vince McMahon didn't do it to me, but you know, that's when it started becoming fun again. I will tell you this, and this is something that may come as a shock to you, for me to say this, but as far as wrestling, probably the worst thing that ever happened to me to keep me from achieving what may have been was signing with WCW. That contract was probably the absolute worst thing that could have ever happened to me.
Because being there and getting turned off after that short period of time will kind of led to you not wanting to be a part of it. And if that never happened, who knows? Yeah.
Absolutely, because, you know, we were hungry right before that, you know, and if that had never happened, never gotten there and got that rug pulled out from under me, who knows where I would have been. But in that same breath, man, if that had never happened and I did whatever, you know, became, you know, whatever in wrestling, I may not have these two kids that I'm so proud of.
Yeah.
For sure. So is it what Robbie was saying, or is it more of maybe getting called up too soon, where maybe if you had a couple seasons to get seasoned, a couple years to get seasoned, you would have been ready?
You know, I think it's more just if that had never happened and I was still trying to get to where I was wanting to be. Because once you get there, you feel like you've made it, no matter how low on the pole you are, I guess. You feel like you've made it. You feel like you're a superstar. And man, I played into that, too, to where my head got awful big. I was a jobber on TV, and I thought I was, you know, Ric Flair. So it's one of those things where, you know, if you're told, hey, you're 185 pounds, you're never going to be able to get here, and you finally get there, you kind of want to shove that back into people's face. And I took it a little more to heart than I probably should have. Had I never gotten there, the head never gets big. You keep that hunger and you keep wanting to get there. And who knows where it goes from that point.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Frank Paris, otherwise known as Air Paris. Where can we get a hold of you if we need to?
And I've said this on another podcast. My Twitter is at Air Paris 33, but mostly all I do is retweet funny stuff that Shane Helms says. So you can find my Twitter at ShaneHelmsCom if you want. Oh, man, I had a great time. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much, bro.
Very welcome, man.
What an interesting story, and the fact that he's not bitter in the least. He really knows who he is, is happy with where he is, and is happy for his time in the spotlight.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of like, did you ever see that 30 for 30 documentary called The Greatest That Never Was?
Uh-uh.
I think that's what it was called. It's about a football player. But anyway, I kind of compared it to that. It was like about a football player who was really, really good, and he got hurt, whatever, and everyone said he was going to be like big, like the Michael Jordan of the NFL or whatever, and he never got to the NFL, or he did, and he got hurt. I can't remember. I'm not a real sports guy. But anyway, you know, kind of like he had that little run. He finally made it to WCW. They had this cool tag team. They could have done big things, but then WCW closed, and then he just kind of fell off, and you didn't really hear much from him again. It's like, what would have happened if WCW didn't close? What would have happened if his attitude didn't change and he, you know, pursued trying to go to WWE or doing more stuff in wrestling? Who knows?
Yeah, and, you know, even by his own admission, you know, he kind of took his eye off the ball a little bit. And, you know, I think right now he wouldn't change a single thing in his life. And it's hilarious to me to hear the old episodes, because I don't know if you realize how hard I had to edit those shows to make you look smart back then, Robbie.
Oh, I, you know, I have a college degree, right? We've talked about this. I was a physical education and health teacher to high school students, Matt Kuhn. This is a true. But yeah, I'm really not that bright, though. I cheated all my way through college. I'm not going to lie. And high school.
Everyone does now. But I'll tell you what's not going to cheat you. If you join our Patreon page and give us some support and support us for the work that we do, because we are putting in tons of work. As you know, we actually recorded two shows this week. Only one got saved, but we're still putting a lot of work for you. You go to the patreon.com/whyitended. Of course, you can listen to us at mlradio.com or whyitended.com, or of course iTunes. If you listen to us on iTunes, make sure to leave a 5-star review. Make sure to subscribe if you don't mind. And if you'd rather watch us on YouTube and listen on YouTube, go to whereitended.com.
That's right. And then tell your friends, keep tweeting with us, tell us future guests you want. And if you are in the New Jersey or Pennsylvania area, this Friday I'm going to be at Modern Vintage Wrestling, and Saturday Modern Vintage Wrestling also. And I am going to be, I think Friday night, Matt, I'm actually going to be wrestling in a tag match against one of our good buddies of Wide Ended, Justin Credible.
Is that the plan here? Like, you've wrestled Ryback, you've wrestled Justin Credible. I guarantee you're going to wrestle Muhammad Hassan.
Hey, I mean, it could happen.
You know, but, you know, it's a great area, that Northeast wrestling scene, and you're wrestling with Justin Credible. What else? You got anything else going on this weekend?
No, well, that's Friday and Saturday, and Saturday afternoon in Johnstown, PA, I actually have an autograph signing. So I'm pretty busy, and I'm looking forward to it, and there's a lot of good guys on the show, too. Abyss is on it. Gosh, I believe Tony Atlas It's a good card. So if you're in the Princeton area or the East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania area, check these shows out.
Not only that, Robbie, but our good friend Frank Paris, Air Paris, is actually running some shows now, and he's booking a fan fest in Rome, Georgia. So if you're in that Georgia area, make sure to check it out. September 22nd. Already announced, it got Demolition, Karen and Jeff Jarrett, Scott Hudson, Ronnie Garvin, Sandman, and Francine. You know, and it sounds like it's going to be a great show. It's at the Forum River Center in Rome, Georgia, September 22nd. It's called the Superstars of Wrestling Fan Fest. You can check it out on Facebook under that name. And there's a lot more names to announce. Superstar of Wrestling Fan Fest. Go ahead and support it. It's run by Air Paris. Yeah, and make sure to check out all Robbie's stuff. I believe it's robbie-e.com.
Robbie-e.com for my schedule. Robbie E Impact on Twitter. And, of course, Real Robbie E on Instagram.
I'm Matt Kuhn. You can find me at Matt Kuhn Music. And, of course, we are Wide Ended at Wide Ended. And you'll never know what to expect, as you found out this week on Why It Ended.